Blog Talk Radio.
Bonjour, mes amis, ça va bien. Oh, I hope we're all ça va bien-ing tonight. This is Sybil Brunchen coming to you live on our weekly podcast of Come Now, Don't Sulk. We're part of the Blog Talk Radio Network, and we are a proud and humbled, both, member of the Here Be Monsters Studios, run by our wonderful producer and our sponsor, Gwendolyn Holdenberry. We're coming to you live right now. It's Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7 Central, or your corresponding time zone. And we are on with Gwendolyn. She is my producer, my muse, my co-host. And we are brought to you by her company, our sponsor, DaughtersOfIsis.com. That's DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. And by listeners just like you. Thank you. Gwendolyn, are you on the air with us?
I am. I'm right here. So in my little Gwendolyn,
Gwendolyn and I are both experiencing weather. We're both weather junkies. We adore weather. And yes. Gwendolyn is coming to you from Port St. Lucie, Florida, where they're having all sorts of stuff. And Mummy is coming to you from the suburbs of Philadelphia on the main line. And we are having all kinds of weather tonight, too. So it's rare. It's quel dramatique. It's very, very exciting with lightning and thunder and all sorts of things. And Gwendolyn and I shared a weather event this past week. Gwendolyn had Hurricane Elsa come ashore in Florida. And then Elsa made her way as in-laws do on the holiday season. She hopped in her station wagon and came up I-95, and she hit Washington, and then Philadelphia, and then where Mummy was this past week on Fire Island. So we took a direct hit in Cherry Grove, and Hurricane Elsa's, well, it was by that time it was just a storm, but Hurricane Elsa's eye passed right over Fire Island. So we actually had that wonderful moment where the storm was wailing against the house from one direction, and then there was this calm and this sort of peaceful time, and then suddenly Elsa came back again. The other half of Elsa hit the house from the other direction. It was quite interesting. It was a real meteorological 101 experience. It was terrific. Gwendolyn, how is everything going with you down there? Are you suffocating in the heat?
Actually, the temperature right now, because of this storm coming over that's so electrical, it's about 76 degrees, and there was a breeze when I began to hook onto the net. There is none now, which tells me rain probably is coming back. We have a heck of an electrical storm going on, and it's actually been other places in the country that have been getting all the heat and humidity. Of course, we always have humidity.
Yes. But it's cooler where you are right now than it is where we are, because we're in the 80s right now. So it's interesting. You're cooler there, and our storm is not cooling anything down yet. It's humid and hot and sticky and very strange. It's very much like that wonderful old movie, Key Largo, with Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart, where the heat is just oppressive before the hurricane comes. And it's very much that tonight.
And
it's
more
steamy and hot. Yeah, very. Yeah.
Jeez, yeah.
Let's tell everyone about a fragrance that would be good for this weather. Here we are halfway through July, and Gwendolyn is at her chemistry lab and her work table constantly making new fragrances for DaughtersOfIsis.com. They have hundreds of products that are candles and soaps and essential oils and just amazing fragrances. And so Gwendolyn always lets us know about a new one each week. And what have you got for us this hot summer night?
Well, it is summer and people are want to smell the flowers. And I have a collection of seasonal and cross-quarter day florals as little roll-ons. They're very inexpensive. They're only $11 each. And this one that I would suggest is called Lunasad. It's a cross quarter day, and it's gladiola. So it's a little gladiola roll-on. And in that collection of, it's under the collection of seasonal and cross quarter day florals. You can get all of them, which 8 in total, for about $75. And we have Cosmos for Sam, and Violet for Imbolc, and Hawthorn Flower, Narcissus in the winter, Jonquil in the spring. And we just came through Honeysuckle for summer solstice. And then I had to, of course, configure with a blend of oils the Deep Blue Aster flower, which is more of during the harvesting season. But right now, gladiola.
I don't know that I've ever smelled gladiola. I wonder. It's funny because
it's
a friend
blend.
Of mine just planted it this year and is growing it in her yard right down the street from me. And it's so unusual to actually see gladiolus flowers growing in a garden. They're so what Gwen and I remember our grandmothers liking to have in a bouquet. I mean, who has gladiolus anymore? It's like flowers come in and out of fashion. And in the 50s, gladiolus were – I remember a fellow had a vase that was 3 feet high, and it was a crystal vase, and it was specifically to put gladiolus spears in. And it was beautiful when he did it, but he had trouble finding them even. You know, how many florist shops carry it? I'm going to have to go to an essential oil shop near me and look and see if they have gladiolus. I can't wait to smell it.
Well, this gladiola is my concoction. I got crisp, sharp, blooming gladiolas, and I infused them. I made an infusion of them in an oil, in sweet almond oil, put them in the sun for 4 days.
Edible. It sounds like something you'd put in a shot of whiskey, you know.
Well, then I screened it, and I went for the scent, and I used a couple of essential oils to come up with a complete bouquet for it, and I call it gladiola. So, you know,
it sounds wonderful.
That's what us old artisans do. We create. If you can't,
you are a bit of a Dr. Jekyll and Mrs. Hyde at your laboratory with your
I am.
With your Bunsen burner.
That's my whole gig. I've got to create it if I can't find it, and I never, ever, ever pay attention to the rules. You know, because some people say,
uh-huh.
Oh, you can't mix that with that. I just actually got myself a whole brand new essential oil distillation lab kit. Pretty penny for
wow.
that, too. Yeah, and
but
they say there's things you can't do. Like, who would put the earth from where you're grabbing all of your plant matter, who would think of putting a handful of dirt into that decoction?
Wow.
I would.
Fascinating. But Gwendolyn,
it'll work.
At some point, like any good cook or fragranceologist, mm-hmm. you've got to be writing down the ingredients as you
because
God forbid you made something brilliant and you didn't remember the exact, you know, recipe, then you'd be screwed.
I have so many bosses. We call them boss. I have so many. I have on my bench six little books of formulas for my regular collections, and then I have large ones on the shelf beside me that keep getting larger. They're bindered.
Right, right.
Oh, of course, yes, everything and how I do it, what I'm thinking about when I do it, the colors I think of.
Yes, yes.
All of
God
that.
God forbid.
Yes.
I mean, so it would be like losing the Rosetta Stone. You'd never know how to speak ancient Egyptian again. I want to just remember, while we're doing it right now, I want to remind people to call in. Tonight, our phone number, as always, is 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639.
And
I
don't
know
if we
have
any calls.
We do have a couple callers online.
Okay. Well, let's welcome them in. Who are our callers tonight? Introduce yourselves.
Okay. I'm opening up 716.
Pamela.
Pamela, how are you? That's Pamela. Great. And she, of course, Pamela is our dean of food on Friday nights, on Fridays at the Sybil Brunch and Lollipop Guild page on Facebook. If you're just new to our program here, we have several Facebook pages, but one of them is called the Sybil Brunch and Lollipop Guild, and it's a page that's just about happiness and joy. It's non-denominational, and it's non-controversial. It's non-political. It's not anything that's going to ruffle your feathers. It's just about joy. And Pamela oversees our fabulous Food Fridays for friends and family. So Fridays, we always do food, and it's photos and recipes and hints and suggestions and all sorts of wonderful things, and Pamela is overseeing that. Pamela, thank you for being here tonight. And who else is on? Is Wayne on tonight?
Yes.
Always a pleasure.
Okay, Wayne. Are you asleep under a mattress? You're very muffled. Is someone trying to suffocate you, darling?
Only my wife. She's got a pillow, but you know, we can work it out.
It sounds like your nurse's aide is trying to smother you with a pillow at the Happy Tapioca Nursing Home.
Okay, how about that? Is this a little better?
Yeah, it's much better. All right, so listen, do we have any other callers, or is this our core right now?
That's our core right now.
Good. I just would like to say, first of all, thank you, Wayne. Thank you, Pamela, for calling in. We urge all of our listeners, you can call in too. Tonight, our subject, if you remember last week, in honor of Pride Month, we started doing all our Pride subjects after June was over. But last week, I proposed something which I think did ruffle feathers. I proposed that because of the way the world is spinning forward, not backward, and even though we've had these temporary setbacks of QAnons and red voters and anti-vaxxers and January Sixers and you know, Donald Trump and his nightmare, even though every once in a while we seem to spin a little bit backwards, then the earth propels itself forward again. And we seem to be, in my opinion, saying goodbye to bigotry and prejudice and racial animosities and gender and sexual orientation and religion animosities. It seems as though we are creeping slightly forward all the time. And before I open the mic to all of you, this is what I'm going to say. Home listeners, if you want evidence of this, just watch any Quaker Oat commercial or Meineke muffler or Chevrolet hatchback commercial in which there are mixed races in the montage. You have a black man and a white wife with a mixed race daughter going and buying oatmeal. Or you have two men with a baby buying a Chevrolet, or you have a nice lesbian couple with two kids going and having the Meineke repair done. Advertising and television are showing us constantly non-traditional family types. And this is filtering down through the Midwest. This is for all of Marjorie Taylor Nazi Green, you know, her dream, you know, for Donald Trump and everything. Her state has these commercials in it. These red staters are being forced to look at a new multicultural, multicolored world. And because of that, I wonder, as an Aquarian, if just as kids today don't really know whether they're dating someone of another race, and just as kids today are seeing gay students bring their boyfriends or girlfriends to the prom, I predict that people will not care whether you are gay or straight, Hindu or Muslim, black or white, et cetera, in the next 25 to 50 years. My grandparents grew up in a world where if you were a WASP, if you were a Gentile, you couldn't date a Jew, okay? Mm-hmm. Before then, you couldn't be a Protestant dating a Catholic. Before that generation, you couldn't be an Italian Catholic marrying an Irish Catholic. So each generation is sloughing these bigotries of the past. And if that's the case, will kids in the future have to walk down the street and say, I'm gay, I'm in a marching band of gay, we're gay, we're gay, and you're not? Will they do that? Or will their own sexual orientation float? Will they be so free dating black or white, Muslim or Hindu, you know, whatever? Will everything be so fluid that gays in the future will give themselves permission to be bisexual? There will be no more coming out of the closet, because you'll just be what you are being, and that will be all there is. Okay? Now, if we don't have a black parade where black people walk down the street going, I'm black and you're not, and we don't have a Chinese parade where Chinese people walk down the street and go, I'm Chinese and you're not. Yes, there's Chinese New Year, but that's not what I'm saying. If there are no parades where people, and there's no festivals where people say, I'm such and such and you're not, if that vanishes and gays are allowed to switch back and forth and straights are allowed to switch back and forth, will there be a need for a gay pride parade in the future? Okay, so my question to each of my panelists tonight is this. There's two parts. What do you think of the gay pride festivals and parades today as opposed to what they were 30 years ago? How have they changed? And do you think they will change or vanish in another 30 years? Okay, two parts. Have you noticed a change in the parades of today as opposed to what they were 30 years ago? And this is a subject all the time on Facebook. And then what do you think of the next 30 years? And we have two straight people. We have one straight panelist. Wayne is on. I was thinking Kim might call in tonight. And then we have our other panelists. So I'll open it to whoever wants to start. Who would like to start?
Well, I don't think that the parades of the 90s are the same as the parades now. There's a lot of commercialization, a lot of, let's put it this way, in the 90s, gay businesses, gay support groups, gay publications were you would see in pride parades representing themselves, and it wasn't a money gig. Now in the larger gay and lesbian and the LGBTQ pride marches, you see a great deal of the liquor vendors, everything from, restaurants, large businesses and corporations are putting themselves to garner business from a community of people who have a lot of what they call the spendable bucks, disposable cash. That's become quite a thing in gay pride parades in the larger metropolitan areas. So I think that's the difference, one of the big differences between yesterday and today.
All right, and I guess, Gwen, if you're finished, I'll step in here. I'd say the gay prides of 30 years ago was the shock factor where you'd have, with many, a collective inhaling of a gas, removing a lot of oxygen from the atmosphere when the gay pride parade went down, from the status quo aspects of where the parade was being held. Some saw it, many, this atrocity, this freak show, this, one of these people just,
30 years ago?
Yes, 30 years ago.
90s, I didn't see that. Maybe in the 60s, 50s, 70s, maybe. But in
I was going back farther, Gwen. I'll concede you on that one. But, let's just, on the positive side, let's fast forward here. I was in Columbus, And for a couple of years there, maybe after I was out there for like 4 years, there was the Stonewall Parade, is what they called it. And it was really just a celebration of, hey, you know, this is us. This is our parade. We had floats. We had bands. We had all this. And I went as a spectator to give support. As you know, I have a niece who is a lesbian out in Seattle, Washington. And so kind of, Uncle Wayne, she and I have always had a very good relationship. I probably knew she was gay before she did. I'm very intellectual. We talk books and movies and things like that. But, and matter of fact, my wife was out there with me one time, and that's what we did. We went down and, parked and just enjoyed and watched the parade as, for what it really was.
I'm interested to know, Pamela, you've been through from Buffalo down to Florida, and you've seen gay pride in upstate New York and probably down in the city. And what's your take on it 30 years ago, 90s, to what it is now?
I think what gay pride originally was supposed to be was more of a celebration of the pioneers that allowed us to be who we are, and it's turned into a circuit party, more so than a celebration of our heritage. And I've seen that as it started out in the 90s, that it was more of a celebration of our heritage. Different various groups of people would get together and do the parade and everything. And now it's gotten so mainstream and so commercial. And it's personally, I hate going to gay pride parades today, because to me, it doesn't send an image or a picture of what gay pride is. It sends a picture. I mean, now you've got, a group of people that are wearing, assless chaps and, whipping each other on the back of a float. And what does that have to do with gay pride? And I get it, that's your thing, but that's what gay pride has turned into, is more of a fetish and circuit party.
Well, I would say there's one difference. I've noticed that in smaller towns, in closer group locations, smaller towns where people are very, inviting, sure, have a gay pride, parade. It's different. It's like it was in the 90s, sort of, in those smaller venues. It definitely is. It's people being original and people expressing themselves and who they are. It's not mainlined with a lot of commercial activity in it. But that's the small towns, the rare, let's have our own little gay pride,
I think that now that we, are in 2021 and there is so much history there, that it needs to be revisited and celebrated and re-educated to those newer and younger generations that really don't know where they just have the luxury of walking down the street.
I would like to jump in here. Speaking of someone who went to the first gay pride parades in New York City and during the disco age, and then that was before.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the 20s.
And that was before there were no gay pride parades. That was just nice young men walking with sailors in Central Park. That's not a parade.
But didn't they have
Pamela,
carriages? Because you couldn't
Pamela,
have boats then.
Pamela, you must never try to out-bitch mummy. Never try to out-bitch mummy. I can scratch and bite much harder and much more dangerously than you. But as I was saying,
I'm such a big covering right now.
In the 70s, the first gay pride parades were there, and then they evolved during the 80s with the catastrophe of Reaganism and
the
plague.
Act Up came out of that.
Was the response to that, and GMHC was a response to that. And then the 90s came, and that was when everything sort of bounced back. and then the turn of the millennium, and et cetera, et cetera. Having said that, the nature of a gay pride parade or festival is that it definitely will be different region to region. It will be definitely different in a village of 1,500 people than it will be in a city of 15 million people. But
yeah.
Having said that, when the first parades happened, there was a very improvisational thing going on. People didn't even know that there was going to be a parade necessarily, but they heard a racket out in the street and a marching band, maybe only one or two. And then they came out and they went, oh, my God, there are gays marching down the street with banners and balloons. I'm going to walk with them. And then that evolved, of course, into the later parades. But I'm just going to say this. The parades had banners that were political. It was dykes on bikes. And it was
yeah.
And it was the Gay Mattachine Society, and it was, you know, the local community center, if you were lucky enough to have
yes.
one. The
yes.
banners and the and everything. And the floats, they didn't have floats. They had cars with someone sitting on the boot of, the,
right.
of the convertible. Okay? And it was you might have a local bar or restaurant have a banner
yeah.
or a car, and they might have crowned a drag queen to be their Miss Spike or their Miss Anvil or their Miss, you know, whatever, Badlands Bar. But it was not Disney with Mickey and Minnie in a floating castle with a thing and a thing and a thing. It wasn't 50 marching bands. It wasn't the Rose Bowl. It wasn't the Roses, Parade of Roses.
It was very Maupin.
Yeah. And so, yes, and so what happened, and I speak from experience on this, in the 90s was, I happened to have been managing the most significant gay club in the United States, and it was called Splash Bar, mm-hmm. and it had shower stalls up on stage and on a runway with a bar around it that had running water, and you had strippers in the showers stripping and showering in front of the crowd, and it was
Ooh.
All water, and it was running water everywhere, and it was amazing. And Brian Landesh and Harry Bartell had put this bar together, and it was a destination. And they not only put this together with all these shower stalls and this runway that came down into the audience and a dance floor and a pool area and everything, but then what happened was they enlarged it, and every year they would take over more of the building it was in, sign more of a lease for more and more real estate in it, and then put more and more showers and bars. So eventually it had like 13 stations in it. I mean, you wandered around from bar to bar to bar, and you had your choice of 13 different bartenders at their own station doing this with showers and things and going and going and performers. As a matter of fact, that's where Broadway Bears first got its start. The big fundraiser for Equity Fights AIDS had its first Broadway Bears strip event in there, where they had Broadway actors, gypsies from Broadway musicals, come and do burlesque, and it was wonderful. That thing happening in the 90s was the beginning of people renting parade float truck things with dragging floats, right? And had entire installations on them with, you know, 25 muscle boys in G-strings and tambourines throwing Mardi Gras beads to the crowd. And then there were 30 bars doing that. There were clubs doing that. Even non-bars, restaurants might have, like, you know, their prettiest waitresses would be in string bikinis waving to the crowd. It was all about flesh and commercialism starting in the 90s. 90s became the S&M float where people were whipping each other and, you know, in leather harnesses and stuff, colliding with a gay Mitsubishi franchise. You'd have a brand new Mitsubishi coming down Fifth Avenue as a convertible, and it would be, you know, Rosenberg's Mitsubishi thing, and it would be and they'd have a drag queen in the convertible, and they would be advertising products. it's fascinating how the gay pride parade went from political, yes, celebrating, Pamela's right, celebrating
history.
Our history and our thing, but in a political and response, I'm putting this in quotes, quotation marks, responsible or pertinent or, you know, political manner into a more and more festive, okay, and then a little bit raucously festive, and then Coney Island festive, and then festive the way that carnival in Pinocchio turns into a place where all the little orphan boys turn into donkeys and jackasses, braying because they grow ears and a tail through their little jumpsuits and through their sailor suits. And, you know, Pinocchio suddenly has donkey ears and a tail, even though he's wood. But it's sort of like the gay pride parade now and festival is an occasion for people to wear pasties and G-strings to get their pasties going in opposite directions, to have Quaker Oats have a float there maybe or something. You know, major corporations are producing floats.
Vodka sellers, big time.
Oh, my God. Well, that, the bar, all the liquors, all the liquors. But this is – but against – they're corporate and they're Wall Street, but their floats are next to the float of the GMSMA crowd. So you've got incredible wantonness and sexual, you know, graphic sexuality butted up against the almighty dollar, which is very much what the United States has become. It's become like Times Square, Giuliani's Times Square. It's Disneyfied, it's tambourines, it's G-strings, it's Mickey and Minnie Mouse. You know, posing with you whether you want to or not, you know,
chain
and then you have to
harnesses.
Give them $20. A chainmail harness on Goofy and Pluto from Donald Duck in a leather harness. It's like colliding rubbish is what it's becoming. Okay? Now, if you say that to gays and lesbians, they say, we have a right to be liberated sexually because we were in the closet for 6,000 years and we are allowed to do that. Okay, the First Amendment does cover a multitude of sins. Yes, you're allowed to do a lot of things. You're allowed to say and do a lot of things. And we have conflicting people now who say, well, I'm allowed to say what I want, but you're not allowed to say what you want. So in other words, the right wing can burn books that they don't approve of in Omaha. But if you want to, but we can then, but we want to ban Pepe Le Pew the skunk because he's politically incorrect. And they get angry at that. Everyone wants what they want. And everyone wants what they want now in the gay pride parade because you have station wagons with fathers in them and the two children that are their real children that they've hired a surrogate for. Everyone wants to be suburban. Everyone wants to be accepted. Everyone wants to be fabulous. Everyone wants to be accepted and mainstream and all of it. Okay? Now, having said that, let's do the second part of our question. Mm-hmm. If that's where we came from over the last 30 years and Mummy was managing Splash and saw that evolution take place right in front of her, right? I saw one gay pride after another there. If everyone is getting so free, if Fire Island and Provincetown and Key West are turning straighter and straighter all the time because now straight people are lovely living next door to gays and lesbians, if there are no gay and lesbian resorts where gays and lesbians can go to be safe because they're not in danger anymore, okay, they used to hide at Fire Island so they could kiss and walk down the boardwalks hand in hand. Now they can start to do that just about anywhere. And straights are okay about living beside people like that. If everything is becoming fluid and everything is losing its static charge, if you will, right, does mm-hmm. that mean that in 30 years people won't know if they're gay or straight? Today, gays come out of the closet. I can't live in secrecy anymore. I'm coming out of the closet. What about someone who likes boys and girls and doesn't have to come out of the closet? They can just be What would happen
in
30 years? So we have teenagers now going to the prom, gay and lesbian, and dating the opposite sex. I mean, the opposite, other genders. I'm sorry, other races. You've got mixed couples. You've got mixed race. You've got all of this, all of this, all of this. Now, their children are going to grow up with openly gay relatives, not the mysterious uncle who never married and is living with the gym teacher on the outskirts of town. Now you're going to have people, right? Now you're going to have people who are raised by people who are raised by people who are raised by people who have done it all. And so I'm wondering if eventually we won't need gay liberation because there won't be anything to liberate. It won't be any more than anyone in a reasonable town cares whether a black and white couple walks into the dinner party. Only in Loserville, Indiana, only in Nosepick, Iowa, only in crotch smell, Wyoming, would a couple, and the mayor and his wife of crotch smell, Wyoming, would look at a black man, like a new doctor who's just arrived in town with his white wife, and they've arrived at the dinner party, and crotch smell's mayor might look over and go, I can't believe it. They are different races. They are doing sin. That Jesus is weeping right now. Only there in crotch smell. Right? But in New York, most people wouldn't even notice that it was a black and white person, a couple. And people in responsible parts of the country don't flicker when a gay couple comes, right? We're surrounded by people here in the main line. And I'm in suburbia now. I'm not living on the Upper West Side. Our neighbors treated us like gold,
Yeah, no.
So I'm just wondering.
That's true. That's true because
I throw it to you
now. Red Port St. Lucie, gay, lesbian couples and people are not, it's just normal. Okay, you're gay. But did you vote for Trump?
Jesus. And, that's not necessarily an untrue statement. Okay, I'll jump in here now.
It's not an untrue statement. I live here. I know.
Yeah, well, there you go. Right. I own a condo now here in Annapolis and loving it. And on our floor, there's four units. And one neighbor is he and his wife. They're black, two children. He happens to be the track coach here at the Naval Academy. And then the couple next to them are two youngish, late 20s gay men. And nothing is ever thought of it. I mean, as a matter of fact, I've told them, I said, I am so glad you're my neighbor because as soon as they moved in, they put a potted flower in the little lobby area that, that all four doors would face and stuff. So they've, they brought that aspect to it, which is beautiful. Right? One's a school teacher. He's also, though, into the theater. He's the theater, and they're preparing for plays. Of course, COVID kind of knocked him out. And I'm not sure what his partner does, but, it's nobody thinks anything of it. They come up the steps, they're welcomed, and it's like they're no different than the young couple on the floor below that, a heterosexual couple. It's all fine. And again,
so you see what I'm saying then, Wayne?
Yes. That's, I guess
you see how it's already it's already evolving this way. And if it can evolve that way south of the Mason-Dixon line, you see what I'm saying?
Are.
If it can evolve in that, and I don't mean this as an insult to Pamela or to Gwen, but between DeSantis and Rubio. Florida was always one of my favorite places on earth, and yet there is still a presence down there that, in my opinion, stinks to high heaven. And it starts senator and the governor's mansion. I'm telling you, the two of them should be killed with pitchforks and loaded into a furnace. They're just the most despicable public figures in this country right now. I don't know which one is worse, but it's like that energy is still down there. And yet, sadly enough, I'm sorry, boo-hoo, but your state is simply spinning forward into the 21st century, whether midgety Rubio or idiots DeSantis wanted to. The bottom line is the Parkland kids who put up a fight about guns are the future. They're the stinking future. And that's what you're going to have to live with, Mr. DeSantis. Whether you run for president or not, you are surrounded by people who are going to inherit the earth, and they do not think you are anything. You are nothing to them. And that's wonderful. It's like going into the waves on the beach and telling the tide to stop splashing you. No, you cannot do it. And that's what's going to happen. And those Parkland kids are part of the future. They're interracial. They are gender fluid. They are sexually oriented fluid. They are the future. And this is what we're going to be living with. So I'm wondering, Pamela, what do you think? What will the parade be in 30 years?
I don't think it'll be as I don't know what it's going to be. I know what I want it to be and wish it would be. More of a celebration, more than a circuit party, kind of like, you know, and
so you think it'll go back to being more of a celebration, which is what it was when it started.
I think it will go back to being more of a celebration. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be less commercial, less wanton, less grotesque.
Right.
Let me pose this question, if I may, just real quick. Do you think there'll be as many, or will it be like just peening out because it's no big thing, it's no deal, you know? I don't think there'll be as many. Right.
I don't think there'll be as many because the people that are putting it together are an older generation. There's not much of a younger generation putting it together.
Okay.
And the younger generation really doesn't want to be bothered by doing the work.
Thank you, Pam.
Okay, that I agree with completely. I think it's going to happen for a couple of reasons, and that's one of them. I also am going to suggest something else. In the old days, there was to be gay and lesbian, and Gwendolyn and I have joked about this, to be gay or lesbian in the very old days was to be a drunk, was to be an alcoholic, because the only place you could meet others of your own kind were in bars and, you know, at cocktail parties and stuff. In the last 20 years, gay bars have been disappearing, and people are meeting online if they want to go the grinder route, and people are meeting socially if they want to meet, and they don't have to necessarily be in AA. It's like people are meeting all over the place, gay and lesbian, and the world seems to be opening up, and there are not gay bars and lesbian bars all over the place the way they were before. In New York, it's totally – well, first of all, there are no great dance clubs anymore, not like there were. I mean, Mummy grew up in the Studio 54 limelight. You name a club in the 70s and 80s, major clubs, I headlined at those clubs. You know, people forget, but I mean, I headlined at the Saints and at Studio 54 and the Palladium and Area, Danceteria, all of those clubs, the Red Parrot, all of those clubs, they're gone, 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 gone. Now, AIDS did a lot of it, but they didn't grow back. Just because AIDS ended, those clubs didn't grow back because alternative ways of meeting gays and lesbians came up. And now, of course, the internet is the great equalizer. You can do anything. There's social groups in colleges. God, Columbia has 12 different gay groups, and none of them have to do with booze. They have gay social clubs in universities now that have nothing to do with booze.
That's funny. Well, you know, let me interject here. They sent me to Madison, Wisconsin, continuing my collegiate education in the electrical infrastructure grid. That was what, and it was like a week seminar, but basically what you did is high intense. You did a whole semester in a week, and you were, you know, reading, testing. And, in the evenings when I had a shutdown and stuff, I was walking around, and I saw this sign being posted at the collegiate billboard kind of thing. It was like, I think it was like the 30% club or something like that. I can't remember the exact equation, but basically what it was it's estimated that 30% of the population was gay, or maybe it's 20, maybe that was too high. But that's how they were meeting, was, you know, we'll call it the 15% club, you know, is meeting at this room here and stuff like that. And so that's how they were networking there at Madison, Wisconsin.
Right.
At the University of Wisconsin was the 15% club.
There are a lot of, I mean, it's just openly out there. There's meetings, but as far as you know, local areas, I see local, like, not meetings, but local, you know, remember the tea dances and all of that. I still see that pop up. You know?
Yes, but not in big bars. There are social groups like tea dances and stuff like that are very sweet, but it's not like what you and Gwendolyn, you and I lived in the age of Studio 54.
Ooh, I know. I miss the bar rail.
Glamour, yes. The Barry White songs on the dance floor that's revolving. I mean, you're talking about like major follies, like Ziegfeld-like clubs with special effects. When the moon, the huge crescent moon, vaudeville moon, came out of the ceiling at Studio 54 and a giant spoon came at its nose with Coke twinkling in it. You know, these things were like huge productions. That stuff vanished.
There were, and the drag clubs, which there are now, it's a drag supper club, but the drag clubs like Zelda's down in Hollywood that was so famous.
Well, and,
441.
And by the way, Sybil Brunson was on the menu at Lips, and Lips is in Las Vegas and in Florida and New York. I not only performed there at Lips, you know, and hosted events there, but I also was the only person who was on the menu twice. It was Sybil Brunson's Muscles, and I was Prince Edward Muscles on the dinner menu, and then Sybil Brunson's Brunson on the Sunday brunch menu. So of all the drag queens that were listed on there, you know, Lady Bunny and everything, I actually was on twice. But that's a restaurant that is, you know, it's not a major dance club like the old days. This whole thing, and look at the customers at Lips now. My God, you've got the most boring suburbanites going there. It's no longer bridal parties are the outlier. Now you've got like a middle-aged married couple that sells aluminum siding, you know, from Bayonne, New Jersey, goes into Lips
true.
Because they heard the Eggs Benedict was good.
The fascination factor, and it has become that. You're right. It's like,
but it's losing. But Gwendolyn, it's losing the fascination factor. The fascination factor was 10 years ago.
For us, but it's losing the fascination factor. But I miss the local little tavern or bar. There's a great place on Wilton Drive called The Alibi that is still there, thank goodness.
Yes.
I can't get
Well, Julius
out of the
is
Alibi.
Still in the village now. Julius is one of the oldest gay bars in the United States, and it's a miracle that it's still there. It's still there, and their burgers are still the best. I mean, you know, I'm looking at the time. We've got 12 minutes left. I'm going to let you guys run with the topic and with the last thing, and come in with what you think, you know, like do the 3-minute thing. What will happen? You've proposed some things. You've said how it changed. What 30 years from now, a college kid 30 years from now will have a child, a teenager. What is that teenager going to do on Gay Pride Day? And if you want to go even farther, let's make it a grandchild. Let's go 50 years in the future. What are today's child going to be? What is the child of these people today and the future? What are they going to be? What are they going to have to say? What will be the world? Will everyone be so concerned with global warming and whether or not, you know, Philadelphia is underwater because the Atlantic Ocean is climbing that high, that people won't have time to worry about gender and sex and everything? It'll just be okay because we'll all be trying to find drinkable water.
It's your state, but Pam, I'm going to hear what you have to say.
So I'm thinking in 30 years, what that grandchild or child would. I do think that it's going to be more of just a normal thing where it just is. I don't think that there's going to have to be, a coming out or anything like that. Not to the extent of what coming out used to be, I should say. Obviously, but I think it's just going to be, they're just going to be, it is. It's just, they're going to live their life and just be who they are. I think that they will be lacking in the knowledge of where they came from as far as the strides that the gay people have made over the years, because it won't be taught and it won't be educated to those people. So that I think the knowledge will be lacking of, you know, when you ask somebody who Harvey Milk is and they'll just look at you, or what the AIDS quilt was, or, you know, any of that. I don't think that knowledge will be there, and that's what needs to be there. I think that needs to be put into the curriculum in schools, you know, like they're teaching everything else.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Well, I guess I'll say I have to kind of agree with Pam. I think the grandchildren of those today, it's just going to be a non-issue.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Right.
Gwendolyn?
Brevity is the soul of wit. There you go.
Yeah. Gwendolyn?
So you're thinking 30 years henceforth, it's possible that gay pride parades are not what they were, but then again, they could revert back to a more historical and, you know, less commercialized version out of real pride. I also think that we're watching, you know, I do think that gay bars, and just what you were describing, and, you know, it's like there's a huge push in the lesbian community to build bars in towns. You know, it's a lot of entertainment people. Delaria is big on it. She's pushing it, and so are a few other entertainers
right.
who are dumping money into it, which makes me happy. Wish they'd get one close to me. but I think it's possible that the gay glide will be, you know, something that will be celebrated instead
right.
of pushed out there because we can do it. It's our right. It's our pride. No, it's going to be something that's going to be celebrated, and people will, you know, probably sort of like Ellipse, there will be those who come to see for fascination because people are people.
Yep.
But there also will be, I think that there will be a rebirth of, I do. I really do.
Right.
Actually.
Well, I always say there's good news and there's bad news. And one of the good news things that's going to happen is that gay teen suicide is going to diminish with
yes.
this greater and greater acceptance. And there is going to be less gay counselors in high school. Children won't need to go to a counselor because they're gay. They're going to go to a counselor because they're a teenager and their hormones are running. And if there's teenage suicide attempts, it'll be because a teenager is crazy, period, whether they're straight or gay. And they're, you know, they're
right.
going through so much stuff that it's between the acne and the menstrual period and the perpetual masturbation and all of the stuff that comes with being a teenager, it will no longer have a gay electrical charge. It'll just be kids are messed up and they need help and they want to find, you know, some counseling. And it won't be this gay thing, lesbian thing, transgender thing. We are going to find the world more and more accepting. And so I just think that that is going to, you're going to see the electrical charge, what I call that static charge, is going to disappear. Cling free. We're going to spray society with cling free, and there will no longer be LGBTQ static on people, you know, and it'll be done. Right. And that'll be the way of the world, I think, going forward. And that's why I also say the good news and the bad news is going to be, is someone driving over gravel? What is going on?
My little jar.
It's not me. I'm behaving.
I did it. My little jars fell over. I'm sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen at home, this is the producer of this program. Anyway, speaking of this program, we're running out of time. I want to thank our wonderful panel. Pamela, thank you so much. We all look forward to seeing how you're going to oversee our Friday this Friday with food, because each week has been wonderful. People have been posting great things, and I've got some things that I'm going to be posting this week too. I'm going to be posting hot weather dishes, things that are good for keeping you cool and not cooking in the oven, cooking in the kitchen. So that I want to remind people that on Facebook we have the Civil Brunch and Lollipop Guild page, and Pamela is our wonderful Dean of Food, Dean of Dining. She's our Dean of Dining.
Oh,
that's
like
what
that.
She is.
I like that.
I love any sort of alliteration. I love alliteration. So she's the Dean of Dining. Tune in for that. And Wayne, as always, it's wonderful having you come in from Annapolis. Thank you so much for calling in.
Well, the pleasure is totally all mine. I appreciate the acceptance.
No, we depend on you now. You truly are the Bennett Cerf of our What's My Line panel now. So Pamela's our Arlene Francis, and then I would like
Watch
to just remind people. I want to remind people that you have been listening to Come Now, Don't Sulk, part of the Hear Me Monsters studio on Blog Talk Radio Network. We've been here with my producer, my wonderful producer who makes it all possible, Gwendolyn Holden Berry, and our sponsor, DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors, and also by listeners just like you. Thank you. We want to remind you that you can find us at SybilSez.com. That's SybilSez.com, SybilBrunchen.com, the Lollipop Guild. You can also find us on Facebook at the Daughters of Isis page. And please join us next Monday and every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7 Central. And hello, Australia. Hello, Brazil. Hello, Germany. We have people listening to us all the time from all around the world, and sometimes they actually call in addition to our panel. So please tell your friends. Join us anytime. Do we have a subject? We've got 1 minute left. Does anyone have suggestions for a subject next week? Wayne, you first.
Oh, let's lighten it up.
Oh, my.
Please, let's lighten it up, please.
You know, if we want to, I'm going to throw this out there. Due to the fact we're all suffering, we're seeing the true effects, the non-deniability facts of man-made global warming. I'll throw that out there as a potential.
Well, that's light. Pam is going to love that, I can tell. Pamela, what would you like? You said you want to lighten it up. You want to make it a festival of brownie recipes from around the world.
Well, that could be fun. It really could be.
I'm going on to that, sure. I cook.
Darlings at home, did you know that in Ethiopia, where people have so little food and certainly no chocolate, they make a delicious brownie out of soil and beetles? That's real good. Do that recipe next week. The famous Ethiopian soil and beetle brownie, which is a very rare recipe, and may date back all the way to Nefertiti.
I have a good one.
Yes.
Specialized cocktails from back in the day in the gay bars.
So, wait, cocktail recipes?
I couldn't speak to that.
Yes, cocktail recipes from back
there
in the day.
Oh, Gwendolyn,
recipes.
Oh, just be honest. You just wanted to get on the air and just drink. You didn't even want to. you just wanted to have the home audience listening to a bunch of gurgling.
Well, that could be fun if we all had video cameras and we could mix them right there.
Very much. Well, we're talking about that, too. All right, listen, we're out of time. We will see you next week. We love you all. We'll see you next Monday night. Good night, everybody.
Good night.